This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the Skating Penguin Network Mailbag. I am Garrett Bahana. Alongside me are my two tolerable, if not uninspiring, co-hosts, Snail, Robbie Noggle. We're back to answer more of your questions that you submitted to us earlier in the week at the Skating Penguin Network Twitter account. And well, without further ado, let's dive right into it. We have 10 questions that rounds out the mailbag this week. Question number one goes to Robbie. Question one comes from Brian, our loyal question asker extraordinaire. Does anyone else here think it's absolutely ridiculous that originally the NHL would not allow Marc-Andre Fleury to wear his custom-designed mask that honored his wife? Brian says that was a complete joke. Robbie, what are your thoughts on the whole mask-gate saga between Marc-Andre Fleury and the NHL?
I mean, of course it's ridiculous, but it's the most NHL thing imaginable. I mean, is it not? I mean, this goes back to last season and the fallout from the Pride jerseys and all the inane, stupid roles they put on the books this year. I mean, we're talking about this was a Native American Heritage Night. He wasn't even wearing this for the actual hockey game. He was wearing this in warmups. It was designed by an indigenous artist, and it was going to be auctioned off for charity. And the NHL, in typical NHL fashion, took a gun, pointed it directly at its groin area, and just started popping. It's the most NHL. I did believe it when I read it, but it's one of those things that, like, it's believable, but, like, you just, like, how did this happen again? It is the most NHL response to a non-controversy that I've ever seen. Again, this is a league that allowed a franchise to bury sexual assault allegations, never penalize them anything worthwhile, and reward them with the number one overall pick in the NHL draft. And that's just, like, the bare minimum of what all we're talking about here. It's stupid. It is just the most NHL response to a non-issue imaginable. And at the end of the day, Fleury and the Wild called the bluff, and the NHL, as it always does, whimpered away with his tail between its legs and did absolutely nothing. There is like the same thing that happened to Travis Dermott when he put the rainbow tape on his sticker earlier this year. Nothing happened because at the end of the day, the people that run the NHL are complete cowards. They always have been cowards. And until something changes at the top, it will remain an old boys club in the worst way possible. Thankfully, Fleury just said, screw it, wore the mask anyway. And nobody was hurt. He wore it for warmups, auctioned it off, and the last I checked, it was the highest price item that was available. And it's a beautiful mask. If you saw it or not, it is a beautiful mask. And honestly, if you wouldn't have told me it was for Native American heritage, I wouldn't even have known. It wasn't like it was a copy of like a Native American headdress or something like that, but I mean, it's just the most NHL response to the most non-issue topic that possibly come up, and it's just another example of them just shooting themselves in the foot because they have nothing better to do. Question number two, again from Brian here. Thoughts on Alexander Ovechkin's comments about him and Sid's rivalry? And I believe this is in reference to a piece by Rob Rossi in The Athletic, basically interviewing both of those about their rivalry throughout their careers.
So I liked what Ovi said, and he essentially said, what people that aren't familiar with it, I'm sure you are by now because it kind of made some waves. Ovi essentially said that him and Sid saved the NHL, and I have to agree. I agree with his comments, and I mean, look at where the NHL was at when they came into the league. They were coming out of a lockout, for Christ's sake. They not only were, they came out of a lockout where I guess like the NHL wasn't necessarily in like, the NHL was going to continue whether Ovi and Sid came into the league. It's not like they were about to fold, but I mean, they came, it couldn't have been two better people coming into the league. They came in with high expectations and they delivered, and they were just them being in the same conference, same division, like that. I mean, you couldn't have drawn it up any better. They went head to head multiple times a year and their playoff battles. And we're looking at this, I mean, what is this, 18 years later or whatever? And they're still, Ovi's chasing Wayne Gretzky's goal record. Sidney Crosby is a top five player in NHL history, and he's still going, and he's at a historic rate right now for a 36-year-old. Influencing, and both of them influencing and just capturing the hearts and minds of not just hockey fans, young and old, but sports fans as well. There's like no ifs, ands, or buts about Ovi's statement saving the league. I think that they put millions, if not billions, of dollars in Bettman and the old boys club's pockets. Mario Lemieux benefited greatly from Sidney Crosby. I mean, it was an overall win, and just the way that the cards fell with them being drafted one in Washington and in Pittsburgh, it was, you couldn't have drawn it up any better. So just to put a sweet little bow on it, I agree wholeheartedly with Ovi, and I love the fact that he has the stones to come out and say something like that, because sometimes the NHL can be so reserved. These players can really just be robots out there. They don't want to, especially this younger generation, they don't want to make any waves. They don't want to draw any unnecessary attention to themselves. Ovi's never really been that guy, going back to when he had the yellow laces and the tinted visor, putting up 65 goals a year. I just love it. I love when these older players come out and they're not afraid to just be themselves. And I agree. I'd be curious. Did either of you have any issue or qualms with what Ovi said, or do you guys wholeheartedly agree as I do?
I absolutely, absolutely loved it. I don't want to repeat everything that Snail just said, but Ovi has never been afraid to really speak his mind on a lot of issues that pertain to the league. And the fact that he basically came out and said, basically, yeah, it's me and Sid. We were responsible for saving this entire league. Like Snail said, they weren't in danger of really going under, but they came in at just the perfect time coming out of that lockout, giving the league the shot in the arm that it needed publicity-wise. And like Snail also said, they delivered. It's not like they came into the league and fizzled out as high prospects that never amounted to anything. Their careers have been intertwined because they've been so close geographically and divisionally speaking, statistically speaking, the playoff battles that Snail mentioned. I absolutely love it. Sid, out of the two, Sid is obviously more reserved. I don't think he's going to give that boisterous soundbite that a lot of people are chasing, but I have reason to believe that Ovechkin just doesn't care. Like, he'll say what comes to his mind. And for him to say it, yeah, I mean, I know Pittsburgh Penguins fans aren't massive fans. A lot of them aren't massive fans of the Washington Capitals or Alex Ovechkin, but I've said multiple times on this podcast, Ovechkin will go down as the greatest goal scorer in league history, the perfect rivalry and rival, personal rival to Sidney Crosby. Just to put a bow on it, yeah, absolutely, absolutely loved what Ovechkin said, and I completely agree with him.
Totally. Kudos to Ovi, and I kind of like where you're going with that, Garrett. That's like, yeah, we don't really like in Pittsburgh like Ovi, but this is like a bigger than like the rivalry thing. This is like a hockey thing, and it's true. I mean, like Ovi brings a lot to the rivalry between him and Sid, and it brings just overall to hockey in general. It's kudos to him, and I hope we get a little bit more of that attitude and players speaking their mind a bit, not afraid to take shots at the league and whatnot. Moving on here to question number three from our pal Brian. He asks, what would you choose if you could have a non-conventional animal as a pet?
Non-conventional animal. Well, I guess like that would classify anything that's not like a goldfish, dog, cat sort of thing. You know, I thought about this question a lot heading into this mailbag, and I still don't have an answer.
Garrett, do you have a dog or a cat? Do you have any pets?
Yeah, I have a dog and a cat.
Okay.
My family's been dog people for my entire life, and they rescued a stray cat last year. So a dog and a cat right now. Non-conventional animal, I will say, which one lays eggs? Is it a rooster that lays eggs?
A hen lays eggs.
A hen lays eggs. Yeah, just for the convenience of having eggs, I think I will say hen. Cow, maybe, for the milk. But, I mean, those are all, like, basically farm animals, so I don't
know. So basically you want to have a farm.
I do not want to have a farm.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to manage that land at all.
You just want the easy access to the to
yes.
the milk and the hey, okay.
Precisely. So I will say hen/cow. If either of you guys have non-conventional pets that come to your mind, feel free to chime in.
I want a lion.
See, you that checks out because you
or exude, are you Mike Tyson or something? Like
you exude that.
No, that's a tiger. That's a tiger.
Oh, he had a tiger. I don't know. It'd be kind of cool to have like a sick bird of prey, like an owl or a falcon of some sort,
like a bald eagle, just yeah. like the post up on like the peak of your house roof. Yeah.
No, bald eagle is too polarizing. That's a signal of like patriotism in America. It's not what I want. I want something stealthy. I want something equally as lethal though. Maybe something like a peregrine falcon or a barn owl maybe. That just sits on my shoulder.
As you record the podcast, yeah.
That'd be so exciting. What a present I would have.
Alrighty, question four. Going back to Robbie here, this question comes from Brian. Robbie, what's the best chirp you've ever heard?
So, like, 95% of chirps you could not say without getting, like, an explicit tag put on our podcast.
Yes.
So I'll give you two.
Wait, quickly, is this chirps that we've heard, like, that have been chirped at us, or chirps we've heard in regards to, like, hockey? Like,
I'm going to say in regards to hockey.
Yeah.
So, one is between Patrick Waugh and Jeremy Roenick. This was back in the late 90s. Roenick was basically jawing at Waugh through the media, And Waugh's basic response was, I can't hear him. I got my Stanley Cup rings clogging my ears. Just a classic. I mean, Roenick never won a cup. There's another one that I can't really say anything involved with it. You have to look it up on YouTube. It's from the 91 Stanley Cup Finals. It's Brian Trottier and Kevin Stevens on the bench. The North Stars' Brian Bellows skates by. It's only a 30-second clip, and they just say stuff that you could not say in polite society today that would not get you suspended or kicked off a hockey team. If you want to look it up, you can look it up, because you should. If you're a Penguins fan, you should be at least familiar with the lore of this clip. But it's just type in, like, Brian Trottier, Brian Bellows, Stanley Cup, or chirp or something like that. And it's only 30 seconds. You might want to wear headphones, but it's it's a pretty brutal 30 seconds. If you're a Penguins fan listening to this and are familiar with it, you know what I mean. And if you're not, go check it out, because it's a pretty devastating about 30 seconds of chirping from those guys. If anybody else has anything, you can add it in here as well.
There was one that I was dying laughing when I heard the story, but Eric Fehr, when he was on the Penguins, he lined up against Brad Marchand, and Brad Marchand is a, you know, big personality and a pest, but Fehr just kind of like leans into him and he just asks, how are the hot dogs smelling tonight? And I guess it just got Brad Marchand so bad, because he's got the huge nose or whatever, the huge schnoz. And I think Brad Marchand said that's the best chirp he's ever received or something like that, was from former Penguin Eric Fehr.
It's actually pretty good. I mean, I know that everybody focuses on like the swearing and the vulgarness, but when you can just deliver like a subtly devastating chirp that just kind of takes a knock on somebody's personality or a physical feature like that without like insulting them to their core, like those are probably the more devastating, you know, kind of like the schoolyard chirps that like little kids toss around that are super devastating, but there's nothing inherently bad about what they said. It's more of a observation than anything. But yeah, that's actually a pretty good one. I don't know if I heard that one before, but that's actually a pretty solid one there. Question number 5, again from Brian. Brian making a big comeback this week after slacking there that 1 week. So he's making up some lost time here. But do you guys like either of the Winter Classic jerseys?
Not really. I think that the Kraken one is the sharper of the two. I just don't understand how this wasn't an opportunity for the Kraken to pull out the old candy cane Metropolitan jerseys. You know, the Winter Classic, I feel like they always go with a vintage theme, you know, back on the like pond hockey, like it's the Winter Classic. Like, I don't know. It's just always, they always go old school. And how are you not going to go back to those like Christmassy, like candy cane jerseys that they had back in 1919 or whatever it was. And then for Vegas, theirs is like extremely boring. I saw that one and I was like, for Vegas, this is a super lame design and color scheme. And I definitely get the vintage vibe from that one, but definitely not wowed. Like I said, Seattle has the sharper of the two, very underwhelming to me, but I don't know, just like the Seattle Kraken season, very underwhelming. So I'm curious what you guys have to say about the Winter Classic jerseys.
The thing I will say about it is I love that they market the Winter Classic about, like, they use buzzwords like heritage and history, and they pick these two teams who are the most two recent teams that have come into the league. So, I mean, for the Golden Knights, they do have a Stanley Cup in their, what is it, 7-year history now? 6 or 7-year history. And the Kraken made the postseason last year. Like from a design standpoint, as I switch over to this tab, looking at them, they're, to Snail's point, they kind of have that Metropolitan theme, but I know what he's saying in terms of like maybe the color scheme, candy cane color scheme. It's kind of there, but they don't pull the trigger and go all the way with it. Vegas is, I like the color scheme. I there's something about that that creamy sort of color, I guess, if that's a way to describe it. May not be the most appealing way to describe it, but I like the V for Vegas. I like how that is designed. I like the gold accents. I like both of these jerseys. I would never buy either of them, but for what it is, the Winter Classic, I could vibe with either of them.
Robbie, any input?
I definitely, if I had to pick one to wear, I would definitely prefer the Seattle one. I just think it's a nicer uniform. The Vegas one, it just does not do it for me. The V, it's been a joke online, but the top of the V on each side makes it look like it's giving you the middle finger. The two points that stick out, it kind of looks like it's whipping you up.
It does.
The Vegas one did not do it for me. The Seattle one, I think I know what they were trying to do. But like you said, going old school and honoring the heritage of the Metropolitans was probably could have been a home run, and unfortunately they didn't do it. But again, when you have two teams that have been in the league for like a collective 8 years, you don't have much to choose from. But the Vegas one, it seemed like they tried again. Seattle at least had a heritage concept to work off of in the Metros, but Vegas was really running on nothing. So I could see why Seattle's worked out a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, not the worst, not bad, but I thought a huge missed opportunity for Seattle there. But yeah, they got the stripes going, whatever. Hopefully it's just not a dud of a game, because I think I'm going to that game. So.
Oh, sweet.
I also hope that, God, Seattle's just so soft, man. Like, it's going to, like, I hope that there's tailgating. Like, I want to go get drinks at, you know, I want that tailgating experience where you're crushing Rainiers at 11 a.m. and got the grill going in the parking lot, but I don't know. Seattle disappoints me sometimes. Anyways.
You got a bunch of tech-hungry tree huggers over there.
Tech-hungry? I don't even know if tree huggers necessarily fits the mold of Seattle anymore, to be totally honest.
It's really? Definitely, interesting.
It's all about tech out here for sure, though. Tech, big money. Could create my own podcast just ripping on my own hometown. Question number 6 from our pal from across the pond, I think, Kim Larson. Kim asks, if you could choose the color for the home jersey of a new NHL team, what color would you go with?
The first color that came to mind was purple. I absolutely love the Los Angeles Kings throwbacks, where purple is the primary color and they have, think of yellow and white accents. Think of the color palette. Like the teams, you see blues, you see grays, you see orange, you know, you see red. All of these major primary colors are put to use in just about every jersey besides purple. Purple is that one color, and I think it would pop on the ice. I think it would. I would go with a darker shade of purple, almost like the Baltimore Ravens, for those who are familiar with the NFL. When I think of the colors around the NHL, you just don't have purple. The Kings, from time to time, will wear those like 60s throwbacks. But if they went if those were their primary uniforms, I'd become a secondary Kings fan just for those uniforms alone. So purple would be my color. If we want a round table, if anyone else has any sort of input, purple was my color, but if anyone else has anything they want to add, go ahead.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh.
How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I actually kind of agree with you. Like purple, I was thinking when I saw this question, I was thinking about some of the unique. I'm a big lacrosse fan, box lacrosse fan, and in the NLL they have some unique colorways. And when you said purple, I thought of the Halifax Thunderbirds, which that's one of my favorite teams, and I love their color scheme. It's like it's purple with a little bit of orange in there, and then maybe like another shade of purple, but it's very. I don't know. Like, I think of like very arena sport esque kind of colors, like very like high vis, and I think like I think that would look good in hockey too. Maybe something like high vis. What about like I know the Islanders kind of incorporate, and I guess the Oilers have orange. I was gonna say, what about like some high vis, like some orange or some like construction yellow thrown in with something?
Or what about this? I was surprised. Seattle. The Mariners and the Seahawks, to an extent, more so the Seahawks than the Mariners. I've noticed that parts of their uniforms have that like lime green or green aspect to it. Snail's like, nah, cut it out. But no, like, hear me out. Go with like lime green as the primary. Like, you want to talk about popping colors? Boom. I was watching the Seattle Seahawks over Thanksgiving. I think they were playing on that Thursday. The Thursday primetime game, and they were wearing those like really vibrant green uniforms. I was like, you know what?
I call it the Xbox green uniform.
Yeah, oh, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to call it. So yes, Xbox green, purple.
Also first. The color of the Seattle Sounders. The Seattle Sounders yes. Jerseys are that Xbox green. The Dallas Stars have like, I think in the past they've worn like a that same color green too, I think, as like a alternate.
I think you're right.
I mean, yeah. The whole high viz thing. Like, I think that construction gear, Monster Energy, Xbox green. Like, why not?
Take me back. With that, we will go to question 7, also from Kim Larson, as we switch over to Robbie here. Robbie, how would you rate Erik Karlsson's first month plus on a scale of 1 to 10? Where 10 is the absolute best?
I will give him an 8. I think that, yeah, slow start adjusting to a new system, but he's more than made up for that. He's been just about everything is advertised. What could make him better? Anything to make the power play better at any point, anything just in general. I can't dog him too much for the defense because we knew he wasn't coming as a shutdown defenseman. We knew his defense was not going to be spectacular. I'm grading this specifically on what we were sold and what to expect. And if the power play would tick up, then he'd probably be at a 9.5, 10. But the power play right now just is so bad, and he's a quarterback on it. 5-on-5 offensively has been spectacular. Especially this last month, he's really taken off and really kind of taken over the role that we all expected him to play, but the power play is still just so bad. And as the quarterback of that, he has to be dock points for that. So if we can get the power play back on even terms, then we can maybe look back at the All-Star break and regrade this. But for now, you have an 8 out of 10 just because he's mostly what we were sold, and just got to get that power play going.
So quickly, Robbie and Garrett, I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit. I am curious. This isn't necessarily a this isn't really a question about the this what grade you'd give him on whatever scale given. But do you feel like, okay, so like when they brought Carlson in, they talked about how, I think there was like a quote from like Dubas or maybe it was from Sullivan, and they were going to put Carlson in selective, like, not position, maybe positions isn't the best word, but like they were going to put him in scenarios to best utilize what he's good at. But looking back in Carlson's career, whether when it was when he was captaining the Sens or when he was in San Jose, the offense ran through Carlson. He was kind of like a free-flowing entity out there, kind of just he was kind of this wandering rover of a defenseman, and it, truly the offense kind of ran through him. It really involved him. Do you feel like sort of the because this is kind of how I feel. I'm curious if you feel the same. If the Penguins kind of have this like Ferrari in a cul-de-sac with Carlson right now, do you feel like maybe they haven't given him the leash to kind of really utilize his offensive creativity and they've sort of boxed him in or no?
I don't think I see that concern a lot on Twitter. People saying that Sullivan wants him to play a more defensively responsible kind of game, that sort of thing. I don't think that's the case at all. I agree with you. When saying that, you know, wherever he's been professionally, the offense has ran through him more often than not because he's just been the best player on the ice for both teams. Coming here, where the roster's already loaded with all-stars, Gensel, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, I don't think he needed to shoulder that much of responsibility. I still think, I don't think it's accurate to say that Sullivan has limited Carlson in any way. I still think Erik Karlsson, much to like how Robbie was describing him, is who he thought he was going to be when he came here. Offense first defenseman, makes you scratch your head every now and again with a couple of defensive lapses, but we had that with Chris Letang for the entirety of his career. Now we're just adding another right-handed defenseman on top of Chris Letang to basically have two Hall of Fame defensemen on the ice for 40 out of 60 minutes. So I don't necessarily agree with the take that he's being boxed in or being forced to play a game that he's not familiar with. But, you know, like you said, Snail, having the offense run through Carlson, I don't think it's necessary in Pittsburgh compared to San Jose or Ottawa, because he was by far and away the best player on the ice for both of those franchises. And everyone knows coming into a Pittsburgh Penguins season, as long as Crosby and Malkin are here, you know, that's how the offense is going to be generated. I would be curious, like, if things keep going the way they are, they win one, lose one, win one, lose two. I don't know if, you know, sort of delegating some of that responsibility to Carlson would make a difference. I don't know, like, if Sullivan gives him more responsibility to try and shuffle more of that offense to Carlson like he was doing in Ottawa and San Jose. I don't know if that would make any difference for the Penguins in terms of on-ice results, but I mean, we're almost to Christmas time and they're what, 10-10, 10-10-0, something like that.
I think they're like 500, yeah.
Yeah, so they still really haven't had a stretch outside of that five-game win streak where I thought, yeah, this team's coming together. This team looks really good. There's chemistry there. It just hasn't been there yet.
I mean, like you said, we're getting close to Christmas, and it's like, I just feel like we haven't had a stretch of games or even like one game where I was like, Carlson put the team on his back that game and did Carlson things, you know, end to end all game. But he was brought in here, and I'm sure there was a talk where it's like, I mean, maybe you guys agree, maybe you don't, but like they were like, look, you don't have to do that here. Like, we have several other great players that'll be pulling the same rope. And you don't necessarily have to. And maybe that's why Carlson chose he came here. Maybe he was like, I don't have to be the guy here. But still, it's just one of those things. I was just curious what you guys maybe thought. Because I feel like I'd said, maybe we haven't really had like a game of Carlson dominance that you've seen from him on other teams in the past.
Question number 8 from Kim Larson again. I know it's in the future, but what 2024 free agent would you like us to bring in? I know some of these free agents will sign contracts. But if you could pick one right now, who would you pick?
Well, that is a tough question for me to answer, Kim, because it's early in this season and we're talking about next year. I mean, if the Penguins don't make the playoffs this year, it's very different what kind of free agent I'm looking to bring in compared to if maybe they did make a bit of a run in the playoffs or even just a one and done. But looking at the list here, it's again, nowadays a lot of these guys aren't going to get to free agency. Like Steven Stamkos, Willie Nylander, Sam Reinhart, like even a guy like Jake Gensel, Tyler Bertuzzi, he's making a case for himself right now. Maybe that's a bad example. A lot of these guys, though, they're going to get locked up by their respective teams, I would assume. That's kind of the way things go now. But just looking at this list, let's say the Penguins make it to the playoffs. Let's say they make a little bit of noise. Maybe they make whatever. They're in the playoffs. Next season, if these guys are available, I would certainly be taking a peek, picking up the phones, calling Sam Reinhart. He's having a hell of a season, and he was good back in Buffalo. He would look good on Geno's wing or on Sid's wing if Rust ended up wanting to slide down. I think that he's a solid right winger and he can really he can really do some damage offensively. He's a good top six guy on the right side. Let's see who else we got. Tyler Bertuzzi. I love Tyler Bertuzzi. I love his gear wear. I love his kind of like, he's a prick, but he just looks so unbothered out there. I feel like the Penguins could maybe use a little bit of a personality like his. I think he's on a 1 year right now up in Toronto, waiting for the cap to go up a bit so he can get paid. I don't know. I wonder how old he is because that kind of matters. Let's see. He is 28 years old. So I would sign him. I'd take a look at Tyler Bertuzzi. Let's see. Maybe a Reinhart, maybe a Bertuzzi. And then I see that the Penguins have kind of, they got their right side set, but that Brett Pesce is going to be a UFA. Would it be an embarrassment of riches to have a guy like Brett Pesce playing third pair minutes and probably killing penalties for you? I'd like Max Domi. Mac Domi, same thing as Tyler Bertuzzi. He's up there in Toronto on a one-year kind of prove-it deal. He's kind of having a rocky start up there. He's not exactly been consistent. I'd take a guy like Max Domi on my team any day. He'd be a great third liner for the Penguins. Let me see, just quickly looking down this list. Yeah. You know who I would take too? Great fourth or third liner is Tyler Mott. I don't know if you guys know much about him. Love his game. Love the way he plays. Always kind of wish the Penguins took a chance on him, but seems like every other team in the Atlantic has called for his services. I don't know. Is this guy? Let me see quickly here. I think I saw his name. Boko Imama. He's just a tough bastard to play against. He's not going to light the lamp for you, but he's that kind of like gritty fourth liner I take on my team. And he could keep the Tom Wilsons off, keep the Tom Wilsons and the Tanner Janos at bay. So I don't know, maybe some of those guys. Do you guys have any pending UFAs that you have circled on your wish list?
No pending UFAs, but it would tie in. My response would tie into the next question, which was going to be my question anyway. We don't even have to read the question. The question comes from Logan Krenke. If you could think of one perfect realistic trade that Kyle Dubas could pull off before the deadline, knowing what the Penguins actually need, what would it be? So I was looking, I think The Athletic just put out their early 2023-24 big trade board. And I was looking through it. And most of the players on that list were like defensemen or goaltenders. There was one player that caught my eye that I think realistically could work given what the Penguins need. When healthy, we know that they really don't have to touch the top six. Assuming Ricard Raquel can kick it into gear eventually and start scoring some goals. If not, well, then we have an entirely different issue on our hands that we weren't anticipating coming into the season. So we know the two things that have hampered the Penguins this season. The power play is issue number one. The bottom six depth is issue number two. The person that I think Kyle Dubas could bring in will not necessarily fix the power play woes, but will give the Penguins much needed depth down the middle and in the bottom six / top nine. That player is former Calgary Flames first round selection Sean Monahan, who I believe is on an expiring contract with a cap hit of just $1.985 million. So just under $2 million. I believe he is with the Montreal Canadiens this season. Through 22 games, 6 goals, 7 points, 7 assists, 13 points. In 703 career games, Monahan has scored 224 goals for 492 points. So the offense has definitely been there. However, I will say that the offense has really slowed down in recent seasons. His last double-digit goal season came in 2020-2021, age 26 with Calgary. He played in 50 games during the 2020-2021 season, 10 goals, 18 assists, 28 points. The following season, 21-22, just 8 goals in 65 games. The following season after that, 22-23, 6 goals, 11 assists, 17 points in just 25 games played. And like I said, so far this season with the Canadiens, in 22 games, 6 goals, 7 assists, 13 points. So there's definitely an offensive touch there. 6'2", 196, so he's a bigger guy. I'm not going to say he's going to throw the body around every time he gets out on the ice. But here's a guy who is not devoid of offense, who you could plug in the bottom six, maybe third line center, fourth line center. Ideally, I think he would be a better third liner than a fourth liner. But given the Penguins' salary cap constraints, a guy who's on a contract under $2 million salary cap hit, like, it's perfect. He has an established record of scoring goals. Looking at some of his more advanced metrics, looking at possession stats, he is a career 55.9 Corsi 4 percentage player, a career 55.3 Fenwick 4 percentage player. Anything above 50%, again, that means that your team is controlling the puck more often than not with that player on the ice. So decent possession player, certainly a player who has built a reputation for putting the puck in the net. Again, I will say that the scoring and the points have almost fallen off a cliff in recent seasons, but earlier results in Montreal this year point to Monahan having something of a resurgence. Six goals, 13 points in 22 games. I would give Montreal a call given the Penguins' lack of real bottom six depth. And well, with that, we'll go to question number 10 as we wrap up this mailbag with Robbie here. Question 10 comes from Edward Beckham. Robbie, let's generalize here. What are some of the biggest rivalries in your opinion across the NHL?
The great thing about sports, especially a sport as old as the NHL, is you have rivalries that have been built over decades and decades and decades. Just off the top of my head, you have with the Penguins, you have the Flyers and Capitals. I'd argue that you'd even throw the Rangers on that list as well. Boston-Montreal, a super historic rivalry. Montreal-Toronto, Toronto-Boston, super historic rivalry as well. Chicago and Detroit was a historical rivalry, and so was Detroit and Colorado. A major rivalry as well. Your newer teams have, we'll say have less rivalries, but all your California teams hate each other. Vegas and San Jose, especially when they were both battling out, they were both very good in the early years of Vegas's franchise. Those were some absolute lightning charged rivalries, especially with like Kane and Reeves. How much they absolutely loathed each other. The Battle of Alberta between Calgary and Edmonton is obviously a big one. Hoping that Seattle and Vancouver can foster a nice rivalry, given they're so close, they play in the same division. Hopefully, as those two teams get better and have more consistent success, they can really turn that into a rivalry. Hopefully, here in the next couple years, those two sides find a way to meet in the playoffs, because that seems where a lot of these rivalries really come from, is when you meet in a playoff series. Philly and the Rangers is big. The Rangers and Devils is another big one. Any of your original six teams are going to generate a lot of great rivalry hype just because they've been around forever. But, I mean, there's so many across the league. And the longer they go along, it seems like the more heated they get. So there's definitely no lack of robberies in the NHL.
Dude, an underrated one that I was waiting for you to say that you didn't is I was watching some old games the other night. Dude, Chicago-St. Louis, like early 2000, like late 2000s, like
yeah,
whatever, Shy St. Louis. And did you say the Battle of Florida?
I did not. That one that it was in my mind originally, and then it kind of slipped as I was naming other ones.
Just a, like recent years, but now that they got that Kachuk down there.
Yeah.
Snail would cream his pants over Kachuk if he was on the Penguins.
Oh, God. I'd be Jersey guy. I'd have a jersey if he's on.
Wasn't, I think Kachuk, his dad, he and Mario, I can't remember if they're friends or if they were rivals on the, I can't remember. I don't know if there's history there like there is with Ty Domi or not, but.
The Domi-Lemieux friendship, I don't even know how did that even come to be? They never, is that just like a Team Canada thing or like, are they?
I don't think they ever played on the same NHL team.
No. But maybe I have a photo saved in my phone. It used to be my background on my phone. It's old Ty Domi with his boiler, and he's in Penguins. He's like he's in a locker room, and he has a Penguins jersey on with like his like Toronto Maple Leafs like blue pants and a blue helmet. But he's got like the yellow Penguins like practice jersey on, and he's clearly just sitting down from like being on the ice for some sort of skate. It's just an awesome photo. I wish one of. I hope before this, the Max gets. I'd like to see Max in Pittsburgh. I think you guys have said that before too. It's been long speculated.
Yeah,
I'd take any Kachuk on the Penguins too, for Christ's sakes. Like this, because I'd take Walt right now on the fourth line
over Jeff Carter, your favorite.
Oh God, yeah, I'd take Robbie on the fourth line.
Yeah, that's right. Robbie getting the stamp of approval from the grinder of our squad. That's what we like to see.
Yeah.
As we, that'll do it. That'll wrap up this edition of the Skating Penguin Network mailbag for Snail. For Robbie Noggle, I have been Gareth Behanna. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the mailbag, and we will talk to all of you again very soon.